Bill Kissel worked hard for a nice life. Robert, Andrew, and Jane Kissel, his kids, loved to spend time with their parents, Bill and Elaine, skiing in Vermont at their 7,500-square-foot vacation home. They spent summers in their pool or on their boat. The house was filled with delightful chaos, but the happiness wouldn't last. It seems like some families are just cursed. I'm Reagan Snyder, and this is the story of the Kissel brothers. Growing up, Robert was the extroverted brother. Things seemed to come easily to him. He was tall, he was good looking, he was an incredible athlete, and he was also a gifted student. He seemed to pull A's with little effort. Andrew, who was 4 years older than Robert, was bright and creative, but he seemed to have something to prove. In 1987, while living in New York, Robert went to a singles resort in the Caribbean where he met Nancy. Nancy also lived in New York. She was born and raised in Michigan, and she came from a wealthy family. Her parents divorced when she was young, and she had a half-brother named Brooks. After returning from the Caribbean to New York, Nancy and Robert became inseparable. Shortly after they started dating, Nancy moved in with Robert, and 2 years later, they were married. Nancy was bright and artistic. She had a bachelor's degree in business and a master's in design. And while Robert was pursuing a master's in finance at New York University, Nancy kept them afloat, working 3 jobs in the catering industry and at a cab company. In 1991, Robert graduated from NYU and started working at a financial advisory and asset management firm in New York called Lazard Frere. 3 years later, Nancy gave birth to their first child, a little girl whom they named Elaine. Robert continued his work at Lazard Frere, and he stayed there for 5 years before he moved on to work for Goldman Sachs. Around this time, Nancy found herself pregnant again with another girl. In June of 1997, their little girl, who they named June, was born, and Robert was offered a position in his company as the vice president for the Hong Kong office in China. After some consideration, Robert and Nancy decided that they would move their little family to Hong Kong so that Robert could take the job. The company put them up in a very nice $20,000 a month apartment in a luxurious estate called Parkview Estates. It was a community that housed expats. The men in the community were on call 24/7, and the wives bonded with each other over their husbands' similar work schedules. And the children of these families attended a fancy private school called Hong Kong International School. And although the wives were friends with each other, there was major keeping up with the Joneses energy among the families in Parkview. The wives especially were always trying to one-up each other with their luxurious lifestyles. The Kissels had hired maids and nannies, and so this left Nancy with a lot of free time on her hands. She spent this time playing rich lady sports, which for some reason is tennis. She started a photography business, and she volunteered a lot at her kids' school. And all seemed to be well on the outside, looking in. They seemed very blessed, very fortunate, very lucky, but looks can be deceiving. No one had any clue what was going on behind closed doors. Nancy and Robert had been struggling in their marriage for a while, but things took a turn for the worse after they moved to Hong Kong. Nancy said that Robert had started using drugs, namely cocaine, while he was pursuing his master's degree at NYU. She obviously didn't care for this little habit of his, but it didn't really start to affect their marriage until after the move to Hong Kong. The pressures of his high-demand job also led him to drinking heavily, and he became abusive while he was drunk or high. It started out with verbal abuse. By 1998, Nancy found out that she was pregnant again with their third child. This time it was a boy, and they named him Reese. And Robert would body shame her and tell her that she needed to lose weight. The abuse escalated over time, and he began physically harming her and forcing himself on her. There were times that she would refuse his advances, and it would send him into an absolute rage. When Robert found out that Nancy's due date interfered with a business trip that he had planned to Korea, He demanded that she talk to her doctor about doing an induction. And when she disagreed with this idea, he flew into a rage and he tried to punch her. But she ducked before he could punch her, and he ended up punching a wall, and that left him with a fractured bone in his hand. A few months into Nancy's pregnancy, the topic of an induction came up again, and it ended with him throwing another punch, but this time it landed on Nancy's face. Nancy began to live in fear of her husband's volatile moods. In 2000, Robert was hired on with Merrill Lynch as managing director of global investments, and he was making very good money. I don't know how much he was making, but he earned $3 million a year just in bonuses alone. And although he brought home some hefty paychecks, he was becoming more and more controlling over the money and Nancy's spending, and he even kept tabs on where she spent the money. At some point, he even took back 4 or 5 of Nancy's credit cards, but Nancy just continued on and continued to play the part of Robert's trophy wife. In the winter of 2003, the SARS epidemic had become widespread and Americans were leaving Hong Kong in droves. A lot of families in the Parkview Estates were worried for their own safety and health, as well as their kids. And so while the workaholic husbands stayed in Hong Kong to focus on their careers, their wives and kids headed back to the States to avoid this illness. Nancy was one of these women. She and Robert agreed that it would be in their family's best interest that Nancy take their 3 kids and go back to America for a while. They went to their family's vacation home near Stratton Mountain in Vermont, and Robert stayed in Hong Kong. They planned on staying in Vermont until they felt like it was safe to return to Hong Kong, but the SARS epidemic got worse before it got better, and it looked like their stay in Vermont was indefinite at this point. While they were there, Nancy purchased an expensive home entertainment system that needed to be installed professionally. The day of the installation appointment came, and Nancy opened the door to find a handsome man standing there named Michael Del Prior, who was there to do the install. And Nancy was immediately drawn to him. They chatted the whole time he was there, and during the conversation, she learned that Michael had been divorced twice and that he lived in a nearby trailer home. Before he left the house, it was clear to both Nancy and Michael that they wanted to stay in touch, and so they exchanged phone numbers. One day early on in their friendship, Michael told Nancy that his father was an abusive alcoholic and he grew up watching him beat on his mom. And he told her that he mentioned this because he saw similar signs in Nancy. And this hit her right in the vulnerability. And she opened up to him and told him all about the abuse that she was experiencing in her own marriage. And Michael became a shoulder for her to cry on. I'm sure you can see where this is headed. By the summer of that year, 2003, Michael and Nancy's relationship had evolved, and she found herself smack dab in the middle of a full-blown affair. Michael was breathing new life into Nancy's. She always wanted a tattoo, but Robert forbade it. And so one day, Michael went with her to a tattoo shop where she got her kids' names tattooed on her shoulder in Chinese characters. Super original, Nance. Nancy loved buying Michael expensive gifts. One of those gifts was a $5,000 watch. While Nancy was tits deep in this affair, Robert was still in Hong Kong, but he started to suspect that Nancy had a little something-something on the side. This led him to hire a private investigator to follow Nancy, and his suspicions were confirmed. She was having an affair. Nancy and the kids moved back to Hong Kong by the end of the summer, but she wasn't about to let Michael go. That was her other man. So they kept in touch and spoke on the phone often. Meanwhile, Robert's behavior was becoming more and more erratic, and he would get all ragey a lot. Maybe it was because his wife was having an affair. Maybe it was because his back hurt. Maybe it was something else. I don't know, but he was getting ragey. He did have a back surgery scheduled in New York in August of that year, and Nancy flew back to New York with him for it. And on the day of the surgery, Nancy went with Robert to the hospital like a good trophy wife, but she dipped out as soon as he was taken back into the operating room to meet up with Michael. It's said that they met up at a hotel, but Nancy says they just met up for coffee or something like that. So who knows what really happened, but they did meet up. And unbeknownst to Nancy, she was being spied on still because Robert had hired a PI to spy on her while they were in New York. When Robert woke up from the anesthesia, he called the PI for an update who had all the tea. He filled him in on Nancy's little rendezvous, to which Robert said, "It should be fine. As long as I can keep her away from the United States, we should be able to make it work." It wasn't until Robert was all healed up and they were headed back to Hong Kong that Nancy got worried that he might know something about her relationship with Michael. So when they got back, she ordered a new secret phone so that she could keep talking to Michael without Robert knowing. But Robert also had a PI in Hong Kong, and he had spyware programs installed onto the family computers to monitor Nancy's internet use and her emails. Robert told his PI in Hong Kong that he was suspicious that Nancy was poisoning him through his drinks. His go-to drink was a single malt scotch, and recently they were not tasting right, and they were making him feel disoriented and woozy. The PI's advice to Robert was to have the scotch and himself tested for traces of poison, but he never did. Deep down, he thought that there's no way Nancy would do something like that, and he was actually starting to feel kind of guilty for spying on her. On the afternoon of Sunday, November 2nd, 2003, the Kissels had their neighbor, Andrew Tanza, and his 7-year-old daughter over for a play date. Andrew and Robert sat and chatted while their daughters played, and at some point during the visit, the girls brought out some milkshakes for their dads that Nancy had made for them in the kitchen. They both drank their milkshakes, finished them up, and Andrew and his daughter headed out the door to go back to their apartment. But when Andrew got home, something wasn't right. His wife noticed that his face was abnormally red, and Andrew was suddenly feeling really tired. So he went to lay down on the couch, and he fell asleep there into a really, really deep sleep. His wife started to get worried about him, so she went over to check on him, and he was breathing, but she couldn't wake him up. Even after slapping his face, shouting his name, she could not get him to wake up. Andrew was in and out of consciousness for the rest of the day, and when he finally did wake up around dinner time, he was starving. He ate dinner, he demolished 3 cartons of ice cream, but he just felt insatiable. So he finally just went to bed, and he fell into another really deep sleep through the night. The next day, when his wife was asking him about what happened the day before, he had no memory of any of it. As for Robert, he didn't show up for work. He didn't show up for work for a few days, and his coworkers started to get worried because he was really professional. He was known to be professional. He would never just not show up for work. His office tried to contact him, but they didn't have any success. And one of Robert's friends knew that he and Nancy had run into marital issues. He knew a little bit about what was going on, so he thought maybe Nancy gave him the boot out of the apartment for a few nights, and so he started calling around to nearby hotels, but he just wasn't able to locate him. David Noe, who was a close friend of Robert's and the vice president of their office, called Nancy looking for him, and she told David that Robert had been having some personal issues and that he would not be returning to the office for a while. But that just didn't sit right with David. He knew Robert. They were friends, and if that were the case, he would have made arrangements at the office, or at the very least, let somebody know. After 4 days had passed without anyone seeing or hearing from Robert, David contacted the police. People in the Kissels' neighborhood knew them well, and once he was reported missing, they started a search for him. Meanwhile, investigators showed up at Robert and Nancy's apartment to question her, and they obviously asked her about his whereabouts. Do you know where he is? When's the last time you talked to him? But she had also called the police that morning to make a report that Robert had assaulted her the previous weekend, on November 2nd, that Sunday, after a fight. And she told police that after the fight, he left, and she had no idea where he was. Police searched the apartment and everything seemed fine, everything seemed to be in place, but Nancy showed a real lack of concern for her husband and the fact that he was missing, and that put up red flags for police. They talked to the apartment building's maintenance, and they had some interesting information. Nancy had called the management office the day before to have a rug moved into her storage room. They mentioned that when they did move the rug, it was abnormally heavy, and it took 4 men to get it into the storage room. They also had made a comment to Nancy that it smelled terrible. The rug smelled awful, but she just brushed it off. She didn't really give them any insight or answers to why it smelled that way. This was enough for police to obtain a search warrant for the Kissel storage room. On November 6th, at around midnight, police showed up, warrant in hand, to search the storage room. And they found what they were looking for immediately. Behind the door of the storage room, underneath a bag full of sheets and pillows, was the rug. It was rolled up and secured with tape and rope. Not suspicious at all. When they unrolled it, they found Robert's body sealed up in plastic wrap, and there was a black plastic bag over his head, and Nancy was arrested right there in her apartment. It was determined that Robert had been drugged. The autopsy showed 6 different medications in his system, including a sedative, an antidepressant, and the date rape drug Rohypnol, but that wasn't the cause of his death. The cause of his death was blunt force trauma. The Kissels' neighbors were interviewed. Andrew was one of them, Andrew Tanza, and he told the police about the milkshake that he and Robert drank during his visit. Police were able to collect enough evidence against Nancy, and she was charged with the murder of her husband. During her trial, the jury was presented with lots of circumstantial evidence that portrayed Nancy as a cheater who had planned her husband's murder so that she could ride off into the sunset with her lover. But when Nancy took the stand, she delivered a testimony that painted a totally different picture of Robert and their life together. To their community, Robert was a well-respected, hard-working, wealthy man. But to Nancy, he was a drug-addicted abuser. She told the jury that behind closed doors, he was a monster and that he's the one who drove her to kill him. According to Nancy, he got worse after the kids were born. He was verbally abusive and he would force her into sex acts that she was uncomfortable with. But after they moved to Hong Kong, his emotional and verbal abuse turned physical. After attending marriage counseling together, Nancy asked him for a divorce, but he told her that if they were to get divorced, it would be because he asked for it, not her, since he made all the money. She said that the abuse trickled down to the kids and that he would lose his patience with them often. When SARS broke out, she saw it as an opportunity to get away from him, and that's when she happened upon Michael. And she claimed that although she was having an affair, she never intended to leave Robert. When she got back to Hong Kong, she contemplated ending her own life. After doing some research on how to make her suicide appear as if she'd had a heart attack to make her death a little easier on her kids, she started seeing different doctors to stockpile the medications that were ultimately found in Robert's body after his death. At the end of October 2003, she and Robert had another fight that led to physical and sexual abuse, and then on November 2nd, while she was making the milkshakes, she said that Robert stood in the doorway holding a baseball bat and told her that he was divorcing her, or he'd filed for divorce, and he was taking the kids because he thought that she was an unfit mother. She grabbed a heavy decorative figurine / statue thing that they kept in the kitchen, and she followed him into the master bedroom. And with her finger pointed in his face, she asked him, "What do you mean you're divorcing me? What do you mean you filed for divorce?" He slapped her hand away. I guess that was something she did often, point a finger in his face, and he hated it. So he slaps her hand away, and when she pointed it at him again, he grabbed her arm and held it in a tight grip. She struggled to break free, and then she spat in his face, and in response, he hit her across the mouth so hard that she fell down onto the floor and dropped the statue. He pulled her further into the room and threw her on the bed and forced himself onto her. And in an attempt to get away, she kicked and screamed, and they both ended up on the floor. When she tried to crawl away, he grabbed her ankle and told her that he wasn't finished with her yet. At this point, she was able to reach the statue, and she grabbed it and swung back at him with it, and it hit him. And when she looked back at him, she saw that he was bleeding from his head. She said that she tried to help him, but he wouldn't let her. Instead, he sat on the bed in kind of a daze before he realized that he was bleeding. And when he saw the blood, he became enraged. He picked up the bat that he had earlier and he swung it at her and hit her leg and knee. She said after this, she didn't remember much. She didn't remember much during the following days, including calling the management office of their apartment to arrange for that rug to be moved. Little pieces of the event came back to her 6 months later while she was incarcerated at a psychiatric center. And on September 1st, 2005, after deliberating for 8 hours, Nancy was found guilty of her husband's murder. She showed no emotion as her fate was read, and she was sent to the Tai Lam Center for Women, which is in Hong Kong, to begin her life sentence. So this leaves the kids. Where are the kids going to go? What are they going to do? Well, they were sent back to the United States to live with Nancy's father and his wife in Winnetka, Illinois. But after caring for them for a little while, they decided that it just wasn't going to work out. So they made arrangements to have Nancy's 24-year-old, 24 or 26, something like that, her half-brother, Brooks, who at this time was a medical student, take custody of all three of these kids. Like, that's going to work. Robert's father, Bill, was not okay with this. His brother Andrew, who was living in Greenwich, Connecticut with his wife Haley and their two kids, petitioned the court for guardianship of his nieces and nephew. He argued that their home would be a more appropriate and more stable environment for Robert and Nancy's kids, and Nancy didn't want this. She tried to fight it, but at the end of the day, what say does she really have? She's in jail. She murdered her husband. So Andrew and Haley were granted temporary custody. But Andrew had some demons of his own that he was battling. Haley Wolf was Andrew's sister Jane's ski coach. And Jane was the one who introduced the two. And they dated for a while and ended up getting married in 1992. And after they got married, they moved into a one-bedroom co-op apartment. Haley was smart. She had gone to Penn State, and then she went to Columbia's business school. She had grown up in New York in a well-to-do family. Her father was the CEO of, I don't know if it's Louis Berger or Lewis Berger, which is a $500 million engineering firm in New Jersey. They also had a house in Vermont, and Haley was an amazing skier. She was very talented. She was the women's world mogul champion in 1993. But even though she loved skiing and she was good at it, the world of finance was calling to her, and that was in her future. She was on track to be an analyst for Merrill Lynch. After Andrew and Haley got married, he started a real estate company, which he named Hanrock. And Andrew and Robert, they're brothers, but they weren't necessarily close. But when Andrew started the company, Robert kicked in $500,000 towards his brother's new business. Both Robert and Andrew drove expensive cars. They bought vacation homes in Vermont a few miles away from each other, but they were very, very different in a lot of ways. One of those ways was with money, how they spent money and how they viewed it. Robert was generally more conservative with his money, while Andrew loved to impress and be showy and spend money that he really didn't have. And through his business, Andrew started making enemies. He was doing some shady stuff. Reports showed that Andrew had put $1 million into a modest apartment building's lobby. But people were like, really? All this cost $1 million? I don't know. They started to wonder if that was true and question him. One resident of the building named Michael Assell started to question Andrew directly, but Andrew's responses were always short. They were deflective, they were impatient, and Michael Assell saw through Andrew. He knew that he was a fake and a phony, and it turned out he was right. Andrew had created fake companies. He paid them inflated fees for work and then transferred the profits into his own personal bank account. He was forging signatures, illegally altering bank statements, and he borrowed $2 million for himself under the co-op's name. Just really shady, illegal stuff. In February of 2003, he knew he needed to get out of town. So he went and he got a house in Greenwich, Connecticut, and he moved in. Haley stayed behind with the kids so that they could finish out their school year. And when people questioned her about the move, she told friends that she just didn't really know. She didn't know why Andrew decided to make such a sudden move. According to Haley, she didn't hear about any of the stuff he was involved in, any of the scandal, until May. And just like Nancy, who I don't think Nancy and Haley got along. I read that somewhere. But Haley was not thrilled with her husband. Andrew was using cocaine. He seemed distant. He would stand Haley up on their dates sometimes. But in June of 2003, Haley and their two kids joined Andrew at their new house. It was a $14,000 a month rental. By 2006, things were looking pretty grim for Andrew. He had been caught in his illegal ways, and he was charged with extensive real estate fraud. He fell behind on rent, and after 6 months of neglecting to pay their landlord, they agreed to be out by March 31st of 2006. And on top of that, Haley had filed for divorce. So they're packing up their house, they're getting ready to move, and they hired some movers. And these poor movers stumbled upon something that they surely didn't wake up that morning expecting to find. They found Andrew in the basement of the house. His hands and feet were bound and he was dead. He had been stabbed 5 times. It turns out that his chauffeur and the chauffeur's cousin had murdered him out of fear that they would be caught in their part of the illegal activities that Andrew had them involved in. All of this right after Robert was murdered by his wife. Haley continued the guardianship of Nancy and Robert's kids after Andrew's death. Nancy appealed, and she was granted a retrial, which ended up being a waste of time and resources because she was found guilty all over again. And she's now 58 years old and remains incarcerated in Hong Kong, and she has no relationship with her kids. It's a very sad story. What was once a very happy life for Bill Kissel turned into a living nightmare.